Hello, and welcome to the December episode of PwC's CFO Direct podcast series, your source for technical accounting matters, business issues, current standard setting, and regulatory updates. I'm Heather Horn, a partner in our national office, and I'll be your host today. We recently released a special podcast to discuss SEC comment letter observations relating to the new revenue standard. In this episode, we'll cover other observations from SEC comment letters issued during the 2018 cycle. Joining me today are Diane Howell and Felix Perez, both partners in our PwC national office who have led our analysis of SEC comment letter trends. Thanks for joining us today. So, Diane, before we get into the trends and observations, can you give the listeners an overview of the SEC filing review process?
Sure, Heather. Corporate finance is the division within the SEC that's responsible for the filing reviews. Sarbanes-Oxley mandated that the SEC review each registrant at least once every 3 years. However, the SEC uses their judgment as determining how frequent they should be reviewing registrants as well as what level of detail that they should be looking at. For example, they could do a cover-to-cover review, which would include a legal review. They could do a financial statement-only review, or they could do a very targeted review for a specific issue, for example, a current industry issue or the adoption of a new accounting standard, the 606 review. The intent of the review is for the SEC to monitor and enhance compliance with accounting rules and disclosure requirements. The SEC will provide a comment if they think a disclosure currently conflicts with the rules and regulations, lacks clarity, or perhaps is inconsistent with information that the company has released elsewhere, for example, press release, analyst calls, social media, their website. They might even get information from other government agencies, for example, the PCAOB through their inspections, FDA, et cetera. That being said, the number of comment letters that were issued for current and annual report filers has significantly declined since 2010, even in spite of the recent focus on non-GAAP financial measures and the new revenue standard.
Interesting. So I guess, Felix, what do we think about this decline?
What I would say is that the SEC is still reviewing filings. So the fact that the number of comments has gone down, it's just a trend, but they're still focused on, for example, new registrants. Companies that are pursuing their first IPO get more detailed comments than companies that are established registrants. More widespread comments that cover the breadth of the document versus in the context of existing registrants, the focus has been around disclosures and areas of judgment where we see the SEC provide very targeted comments that may cover a single accounting topic or maybe a new accounting pronouncement that was adopted, like 606, in which the SEC wants to get more information to understand how the company arrived at the disclosures that they provided.
Okay, very helpful. And before we move on, actually, Diane, I want to loop back, well, something to you guys both said. So these more targeted reviews, or if they're just looking at maybe an industry issue or, you know, one standard, does that sort of, quote, count as being reviewed once in a three-year cycle, or does it have to be a full cover-to-cover review?
That's a good question. It does count, and in fact, sometimes registrants will be reviewed and won't even know that they were reviewed because they won't receive a comment letter. So,
Interesting. Yes. With that, then, let's jump into some of the actual trends that we've been seeing. So you mentioned, obviously, the comments on the new revenue standard, also mentioned non-GAAP measures, and I know, you know, perennially we talk about non-GAAP measures, so are we still seeing a lot of comments in that area?
We are, and it's still the number one comment letter trend we've seen in the past year, although it has gone down in the number of comments compared to 16 and 17 when the biggest activity was observed. We still see comments around prominence, companies that may still make tweaks to their earnings releases, and SEC comments on the fact that they may be trying to highlight non-GAAP measures in a more prominent way than GAAP measures. Reconciliations, the SEC wants to still may see a new reconciliation and that doesn't start with the GAAP number. They want to see the company disclosure to start with a GAAP number and how that amount is being adjusted to arrive at the non-GAAP measure. And we're seeing some comments around new adjustments. So there's something new that the company is adding to their non-GAAP measure that it's being adjusted for. The SEC may comment on that and ask questions to understand why the company may be adjusting for that amount.
So it sounds like any change then is something that the SEC staff may hone in on?
That's right.
Okay. And then Diane, is non-GAAP measures really the only area outside the financial statements that we see comments, or are we seeing other comments outside the financial statements?
We continue to observe comments on the MD&A, particularly when the disclosures are boilerplate or do not give investors a clear analysis on ongoing material trends. The three areas that they tend to focus on are results of operations, critical accounting estimates, and liquidity and capital resources. For results of operations, generally the discussion and analysis of results of operations, including descriptions and quantification of unusual events, the SEC will comment on. They also don't want to just see year-to-year, year-over-year numerical comparisons. They want to understand the trends. Also, if a company lists several factors for the reason for a change in one financial statement line item, the SEC will oftentimes ask for separate quantification of those different factors. Moving on to critical accounting estimates, they will comment on, you know, the judgments made and the application of significant accounting policies, and also the likelihood of materially different reported results if those assumptions change. One of the areas of a lot of focus is on goodwill analysis, in particular on reporting units when the fair value is not significantly in excess of the carrying value. We call these reporting units at risks. And the SEC will specifically ask for the following disclosures: the amount of goodwill allocated to the reporting unit, a description of the method and key assumptions used, a discussion and degree of the uncertainty associated with the key assumptions, and a description of the events or changes in circumstances that could reasonably be expected to negatively affect the assumptions. And lastly, liquidity and capital resources. The comments there include describing or a request for clear discussion of the drivers of cash flow and the known trends and uncertainties relating to meeting the known and reasonably likely future cash requirements. The SEC also doesn't want to see a narrative reiteration of the statement of cash flows. Oftentimes, when companies analyze their liquidity, they simply put in a narrative format the statement of cash flows.
So, Diane, it sounds like but that all of these questions, sort of general trend, is getting behind the actual numbers and providing a little more explanation or a greater sense of what's going on than just something that's boilerplate, as you said, or a number on the page.
That's right. The intent of the management's discussion analysis of the MD&A is to see the business through management's eyes and to understand, you know, what's expected in the future as well as why things happened the way they did in the past.
So then, with that, I guess, why don't we turn to the financial statements themselves? And Diane, if we look at the comments in that area, I know we've talked a lot about the new revenue standard. What other types of comments are we seeing there?
Well, segments are continuing to get a lot of focus, particularly the identification of segments as well as the aggregation of segments. For the identification of segments, these staff will often question how segments were identified, and they'll look to other information that the company has provided, like I mentioned before, in press releases, analyst calls, social media, et cetera, and they'll make sure that it's consistent with those other disclosures. For the aggregation criteria, it's a high hurdle to have that similar economic characteristics, so they'll oftentimes ask registrants to support that conclusion that aggregation is appropriate. They'll also ask questions due to events that are reported by the company, either in other filings or, as I said before, other sources of information, including acquisitions or dispositions. You know, how would that change segments, the changes in the organization structure, or changes in key personnel? Those oftentimes, you know, change the business. Another frequent source of comments is a company's lack of entity-wide disclosure. Is that are required by the literature, and these would include the reporting entities, products and services, geographical areas, as well as major customers. Also, to resolve segment questions, the SEC will oftentimes ask for the CODM package as well as other documents, and they do this to be able to evaluate whether or not, you know, management's reporting conclusions are appropriate.
Well, so it sounds like, in addition to just making sure you include all the standards, like disclosures, for example, those entity-wide disclosures, it's then really taking that step back to say, does all of the information we have publicly available fit together, as well as is it also consistent with how we are managing things internally? So a lot to think about in this area.
It needs to all tie together.
Okay, very good. So then, I guess one question, this goes back a little to the new revenue standard, but it's definitely something we've talked about on other webcasts and podcasts, and it's the focus on the SAB 74 disclosures. And really, as you're preparing to adopt a new standard, the types of disclosures people are making, and obviously we have some coming up with the LISA standard for public companies within the next month. So Felix, can you comment on what we've seen in this area?
Sure. One thing that I point out is that comment letters around SAB 74 disclosures, we haven't seen that many because for the most part, when I think about it, the timing in which the SEC may review a filing that contains those disclosures, it may be 1, 2, 3 months after filing, and then the next quarter may be the period in which they have adopted it. So I think the SEC may have preempted their expectations of what they want to see by providing the codified language that was included in accounting standards, saying that we want to companies include disclosures about the qualitative aspects of their adoption of accounting standards. And they highlighted the three main ones: revenue, leases, and the credit loss standard that will be impacting registrants for the next upcoming years. So we're seeing that. And also, although there have been a few comments in which if the company fell short on providing anything, so it may be very poor plate, I've seen the SEC at least issue a few comments in which they've asked, please provide us more qualitative disclosure as to where you may be in the process and what still remains to be done to adopt the standard.
So it sounds like even if you are feeling behind and you don't have enough information to really say maybe what the quantitative impact is, that registrants should focus on making sure they at least disclose status.
That's right. The way that I tell to my clients is you should disclose what you know and be as clear, as transparent as to where you are in the process and what still needs to be done.
So Felix, before we wrap up with some best practices, any other trends that you would want to highlight for our listeners?
Sure. Since we're in the topic of judgment, where I would say is where the SEC tends to issue more comments, I'll highlight fair value as one area that we've seen comments from the SEC. And three of the highlights that I've seen is they want to see more disclosures around the valuation techniques that are used for different class of assets and liabilities. They want to provide or obtain more information around the unobservable inputs that are used for level 3 financial instruments that are valued under that model, and information about non-recurring measurement. That's an area where I've seen registrants, since it doesn't require recurring disclosures, it only is required when it happens. The SEC has said, well, you took an impairment in this year. Where are the related non-recurring fair value measurement disclosures for that particular impairment?
So it sounds like, similar to our earlier conversation, this is another place the SEC is trying to get more information and make sure that registrants are providing some context for the numbers they're providing.
That's right.
Great. Thank you. This has been really good information regarding the trends themselves. I guess, Diane, before we wrap things up, can you give our listeners a few best practices to keep in mind when actually responding to SEC comment letters?
Sure. There's several best practices to keep in mind. First would be the company needs to own the process. They need to look at this the same way they would look at any other project. They need to appoint a project lead. They need to set up a timeline. They need to make sure that they involve and leverage the knowledge of their outside counsel, their auditors, and most likely various people within their own organization. Also, very, very important, don't rush. The SEC asks for responses within 10 days. However, it's quite common and it's totally appropriate for your SEC counsel to request additional time to provide those comments. We always find that when a company rushes and to get the response in, it generally makes the process longer because the SEC staff will come back with sometimes even a longer question because they don't understand the response. So it's usually you're better off taking your time and writing a fulsome response. Oftentimes, a company won't understand a comment. If you don't understand the comment, then you know the staff has encouraged people to call them up and ask about it. You need to understand the intent of the comment in order to be able to answer it appropriately. Don't over-rely on a precedent. If the company The first thing company will want to do is, you know, research, go on the web, and find out who else has had a similar comment and what the response was. You know, to copy and paste that response just isn't a good idea, because usually there's the underlying facts and circumstances are different. The SEC might have agreed to that comment because of materiality consideration. There's lots of different reasons. So, you know, using other responses is one source of information, but it shouldn't be relied on exclusively. Also, if throughout the, as a result of the SEC review process, a company, a registrant has agreed to either modify or their current disclosures or add new disclosures, we think it's best practice to provide those disclosures to the SEC during the review process to make sure that there's a meeting of the minds, if you will, before the process is done. This way, you won't get another comment when you put those disclosures in your future filings. And lastly, just a reminder that comments do become public on the SEC websites, both the comments and the responses, no earlier than 20 days after the review is complete or the registration statement is deemed effective. You can ask for confidential treatment for information to be redacted during the public release, but it is all public information, even comment letters that are part of the confidential filing process.
Thanks, Diane, and also thanks to you, Felix. This has been a great discussion, and I think will be very helpful to our listeners as they get ready for the year-end cycle, as well as any SEC comments. And to our listeners, for additional information on the topics discussed today, including examples of common comments across all topics, as well as some sector-specific and other information, please check out our new interactive SEC comment letter page on CFODirect.com. For PwC, I'm Heather Horn. Thanks for tuning in.
This podcast is brought to you by PwC, all rights reserved. PwC refers to the U.S. member firm or one of its subsidiaries or affiliates, and may sometimes refer to the PwC network. Each member firm is a separate legal entity. Please see www.pwc.com/structure for further details. This podcast is for general information purposes only and should not be used as a substitute for consultation with professional advisors.